Boom, that is Who Run the World, Girls by Beyonce. I'm here with the Notorious HBJ. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
The Notorious, yeah.
I like that moniker.
Yeah, that's good, right? Yeah. Maybe you should stick with that. Hey, so you were just talking about Hawaii. I just got back from Hawaii.
Oh.
I literally just got back from Hawaii. I was in Oahu for like 2 days.
Not 2 days?
No, 2 days too short. 4 days.
It felt like two, but four days is better. It gives you a chance to sort of mellow out a little bit and see how a very blue state is able to do well and maintain a really nice quality of life.
Yeah, you know, they're doing some infrastructure projects over there. They got this big tram. It's that's going to connect, I think, the west part of the island to Honolulu. But hey, you know, I like this song of your, you know, the song that you picked, Who Run the World. You had originally said, you know, Ode to Joy. You're a classic music person. I said, maybe do you have anything more contemporary? So we settled on Who Run the World. You've done a lot of work. You've done a lot of work on women's rights, on women's issues.
I have.
Do you want to just kind of quickly, you know, I think this is probably one of your kind of signature issues is women's rights. You carried a lot of bills,
right?
Yeah. I think the one that I remember you for, and I could be wrong.
Fair pay.
Uh-huh. And then boards, is that correct?
Women and corporate boards.
Yes. Okay, so for folks listening, you know, the audience here is mostly capital insiders. But what do you know, over time, you know, folks from all around the state are listening just for civic engagement.
Nice.
So, Senator Hannah Beth Jackson, which Senate district?
19th district. I represent all of Santa Barbara County and the western part of Ventura County, about 120 miles of coastline.
Okay, about a million people there.
Close to a million people.
Very cool. Do you want to just talk about this Fair Pay Act stuff and the women and board stuff?
Okay. Well, I kind of have come to this because when I was a little girl, I was a really good athlete, but I wasn't allowed to play Little League because girls couldn't play Little League. We weren't even allowed to try out. And I felt that this was such an arbitrary and ridiculous limitation that I decided this was just not going to continue. So after going through law school and started off my legal career as a deputy DA and seeing that the women in the office were referred to as girls when they were old enough to be my mother, I decided that I was going to work to try to change that inequity and that lack of respect that women have. So when I got elected, I really started working on the issue. I had been involved. I had helped start our first shelter, women's shelter, and I had also been involved in creating a group that was committed to getting more women elected to public office.
You've been around for a while. In your view, how much of this has changed meaningfully and how much work is left to be done?
Well, it will be changed when we have a woman president. And as RBG says, women will have achieved equality when there are nine. That's nine women on the Supreme Court. When you think about it, for how many years has it been just nine men? But until that happens, I would say we've made some significant advances, and the Fair Pay Act was an example of that. Something that should have happened decades ago, arguably did, but was never enforced. So California's had an Equal Pay Act since 1949, but the way it's been interpreted by male judges has been the work had to be exactly the same. Well, people do... They do their work slightly differently. If you're a big, tall, husky person, you are more likely to be able to lift bigger boxes and lift perpetrators if you're a police officer. But as a woman, we discover that women find other ways to get the same job done and sometimes in better fashion.
Yeah, they do it with their mind.
Well, we are women. Exactly. We have greater, generally speaking, we have greater intellectual, or I should say emotional intelligence, and we're more collaborative. That's just when you look at women in history.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, not to cut you off, but I mean, I think there's this, you know, I'm with you like 95% of the way. And I got to say,
That's better than my husband and I. Yeah, that's pretty good, yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that really happened for me, really for like, you know, appreciating the importance of this issue is just getting married. And, you know, well, really it was moving in with my wife and then getting married and stuff. And like, you really,
I won't tell your mother.
Yeah. No, you know, well, my, yeah, I mean, it was just, there was a different, appreciation for my wife than for my mother. You know, my mom was a single mom, so I didn't, you know, she was working. I was at wrestling practice. She made a big casserole on Sundays. And then it was until I seen it again next weekend, really, you know.
That's tough.
It's, you know, we turned out okay. But my wife, she accomplishes so many little things with her mind, you know, where it's like I would try and brute force something.
Well, that's a perfect example. And it's not to say one is better than the other, but they are certainly no less important. And that's where we have seen throughout history, we have by almost automatically given men's work, men's abilities, a higher importance than we have women's work and women's kind of the things that we bring to the table. So the goal is to bring both men and women to the table where we can do the maximum and achieve the greatest result. And that's the work I've done.
I totally agree with it. I think the only maybe where there's some disagreement is like what the mechanisms are for achieving this. Right. And so like just in my own personal view, right, is, you know, women are going to achieve equal pay and probably greater pay in the free market than men. And I this is probably my own downfall, but I read a lot of like libertarian readings and stuff like
that. But you see, it hasn't worked that way. Let me get through this thought.
The arc of society, and I'm with you, and this is a good thing, but the arc of society, and I see it through a forensic, you know, examination of my own personal experience and the people that I see out there. And you know, saying I'm a martial arts coach, I interact with people in all segments of society all the time. The arc of society is becoming more feminine and not more masculine. And that's a good thing. It's becoming less violent. It's becoming more stable. You know, physical labor is less and less important. It's less and less high value than it used to be. We even got to an unfortunate point in our history where we even saw like, you know, working with your hands and the trades is kind of like lower type of work, when in reality it's kind of coming back. And, you know, for the first time in American history, I think we're at this point now where more men are gaining upward social mobility through marriage than women. Shoot, that's what happened with me. You know, my wife is a stem cell scientist. I can barely read and write. So, you know, like if you just ask, like, who's going to make more money? My sister's husband, Anthony, I love you, IBEW apprentice. Right, my sister works at Google. Right, so I just feel like the
but if your brother-in-law worked at Google and your sister-in-law worked there,
yeah.
The question is, are they being paid equally for the work they do?
Yeah, I don't know enough about Google to you
or,
know.
Or it doesn't have to be Google. Yeah, that's why I did this Fair Pay Act. Sure. Is that women still make less per hour or than men do.
Hey, so catch us up on the status of the legislation. Did this happen? Did you get
it? It did happen. Okay. In 2015, we actually got the bill passed with almost unanimous support. We even had the Chamber of Commerce in support. Okay. Because we know that
what did you do to the bill to get there?
Well, we worked hard with the chamber and we worked hard with the different groups. But the reality, see, the today's reality in the workforce is that 70 or more than 50% of women are in the workforce today. And of 70% are either the sole breadwinner of their families, like your mother, or they're the primary breadwinner, as you mentioned, your wife, or their incomes are just necessary for people to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And so for families, it is important that we not leave money on the table because women are paid less. Women need to be paid a fair pay and a pay that is not based on gender. And when we have done that in the past, women's work, women's pay has been less. It's just a fact, and it's something that we need to look in the mirror and ask ourselves, why do we devalue women's work? For example, someone who can figure out an algorithm, that certainly is worth as much as a man who can lift 200 pounds. But for years, we have given much greater priority to that sense of raw power because men have that power and women, generally speaking, have not. So looking at the value of work, for example, it used to be that a tree trimmer was paid more than an emergency room nurse. Why should that be? You have more education, more responsibility, greater stress as a nurse.
I won't argue that.
But the tree trimmers were men and the nurses were women. So what we did is we said, you know, you can't do that anymore. You have to look and you have to pay equally for substantially similar work. And because of that, we're now seeing employers, because they have to and because they have people working in the workforce who are calling them out on it and saying, you know what? you're not paying Sarah equally, and she's doing as much work and she's doing it as well. So you need to look and make sure that you are and evaluate that pay schedule so that you're not paying her less because she's a woman.
Yeah. So I kind of hope we can kind of keep us going topic through topic here,
because
we're short on time here. You know, it's funny, just quickly, the tree trimmers. You know, I grew up in Pacific Beach, and I grew up doing, like, demolition work for my buddy's dad, who's an architect. And there was this whole, you know, service economy in La Jolla where I guaranteed you if I started trimming trees in La Jolla, you could, you know, but that's just a free market thing, right? Like, you know, we're short on physical labor, and, you know, no one wants to do it. So, you know,
again, why should a valet be paid so much more than the housekeeper who cleans the rooms at a hotel?
Well, they're in different verticals. They're in different verticals, right? Like, if I don't care what the gender of the valet is, they're just in different.
How many valets have you seen who are women?
Not many.
How many housekeepers have you seen who are men?
Not all my, you know, all my mother did some work as a housekeeper. You know, you see, all my aunts and uncles.
Those are jobs that are put into gender categories. And you tip a guy $10 if he, you know, takes your car and moves it to the front of the hotel. Do you tip a housekeeper $10 every day that she cleans your room, makes that heavy bed, the mattresses and all, cleans the room, cleans them, you know, whatever? No. And so this bill requires that you take a look at the value of the work from a gender blind perspective.
Hey, so it's been 4 years.
Yeah.
Has there been meaningful change in the outlook for women?
Well, we think so, but I'm now doing a bill to collect pay data, information from companies to see what they're paying people based upon the kind of work that they're doing in the workforce. It's a bill that's going to require employers of 100 or more to provide the state with the information about what they're paying the different categories of workers in their workforce. And that will help us get a sense of whether or not we are seeing a reduction in that kind of gender bias in the pay schedule.
Hey, respectfully applaud the work that you're doing, especially, I mean, I was raised by my mom and sister, essentially. Great respect for what you're doing. Where I think maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but just to wrap this up, is comparing services that are in essentially different economic categories. I think that just gets a little bit tough, but what can you do? You're in power, and it is your privilege to legislate. So, what else are you working on this year?
Well, I am doing legislation to make sure that we pay or not pay that we treat women in the educational arena so that they are not subjected to an environment that creates a hostile opportunity for learning. Title IX. Okay. Is what it is. And Title IX is a legislation that passed 50 years ago, and it is designed to give women and girls equal footing in the educational arena so that whether it's in sports or whether it's in STEM or regardless of what the area is, that women have the same opportunities for success as men do. It also means that you cannot create a hostile environment of learning, which is where we start addressing the fact that 1 in 5 women will be the victim of sexual assault during her years in college.
Yeah.
It's astonishing that we have that happening. So I'm doing a legislation, I've been working on it for a few years, that is going to try to address that problem, to reduce the likelihood that this will happen, and to make sure that schools are responsive when this behavior happens and that they take appropriate action to remove...
What's going to happen? They lose their funding?
It's actually on a school-by-school basis. We're going to allow the state to enforce this. It is going to also allow for different communities to be able to step forward to challenge results, for example, that occur if there is an allegation of assault on campus. We want to make sure that there is a due process system that is created so that the issue will be resolved appropriately. We can protect victims of these assaults, and we can also make sure that we have a due process
system. You're the chair of judiciary.
I am.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you're well-suited to understand and appreciate the due process concerns. I was always of the opinion that the due process is you go to the criminal justice system.
Well, there's levels of due process. If you are engaged in a criminal proceeding where your liberty is at stake, you are entitled to a different level, a higher level, if you will, of protection than if it's an administrative proceeding. And we have different standards of proof that you have to show, whether it's a civil proceeding or a higher proceeding, and then of course, the highest of all.
I'm sure you know this issue probably better than I do. My understanding is that when you go through these like administrative proceedings, it can create bad outcomes for everybody. Even the victims will be like, well, I thought I gave my testimony already to the school, and now I have to relive it again and give it to the cops as well. I've seen these situations happen a lot. And it can create bad outcomes for everybody involved.
Well, but the problem is that that a lot of these victims do not want to pursue prosecution.
Maybe we should have a conversation around, hey, let's pursue prosecution so this guy doesn't do it again.
Well, let me give you an example. The women who are going through the Weinstein
trial right now.
What they are going through, no woman in their right mind is going to want to subject themselves to that kind of treatment. And so what's happened in a lot of these situations, first of all, only 5% of rapes are even reported. Why? Because women don't want to have to go through this again. So we have to recognize what happens when a woman or others, I mean, women aren't the only ones victims of rape. Our LGBTQ community suffers tremendous harassment and what have you. But the process has been so historically imbalanced on behalf of the alleged perpetrator that people aren't willing to step forward. And we know that in the situation of rape, it's usually about 5%, or I should say 90% of all rapes are committed by 5% of the people. They're serial rapists, right, or they're people who are, you know, creating this kind of unhealthy relationship and atmosphere on a college campus. And we need to remove them from those situations, not re-victimize the victim again. What we see is about a third of women who have been the victims of sexual assault in their college careers, they leave and do not finish up their degrees.
No, that is too bad. I mean, the number you just said, there's just different ways to view it, right? Like, it's the same guys doing it over and over again. To me, that says, hey, we should have a broader conversation about, you know, almost the duty and the necessity of pursuing it through the criminal justice system so that they don't do it again. But it's just,
if you remove them from a college campus, they're not going to do it again on that college campus.
They're going to do it again somewhere else to somebody
else.
Well,
that may be. And hopefully at some point, people will step forward.
I personally don't understand why there's been such resistance to having an honest conversation about, hey, there's almost like a duty to step forward. And then having an honest conversation about when you do step forward, let's figure out the criminal justice system to be kinder, to be more understanding, to be more streamlined. I mean, this thing with the rape kits is unconscionable.
That is true. There's no argument there. But the process, the criminal justice process, holds these very high standards.
Yeah, I get that.
Proof beyond a reasonable doubt to a moral certainty. I mean, this is a very high standard.
Hey, your staffer's getting nervous here.
Let me just finish up, though, if we're talking about that. So I've done legislation, the Yes Means Yes legislation I did with Kevin DeLeon back a few years ago, that talks about affirmative consent when it comes to sexual conduct. It's there has to be, you get to yes, rather than try to get a victim so intoxicated that they are unconscious, and then you argue, well, she didn't say no. Well, of course, because she was unconscious. But if you have to get to yes, it's a whole different paradigm, and hopefully we're going to see more and more of that as we educate young people on what is appropriate behavior. Yeah.
Kevin DeLeon, I think it was Vanity Fair, is like 2017 Women's Champion.
Well, he did a lot for women.
Yeah. Okay, I think we can leave it at that.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
You're going to have to come on again, okay?
Yeah,
we'll
I'd
have
be
a,
happy
a broader
to.
Discussion.
Great. Okay.
Mics are off.
Sorry.